I'm an alcoholic, Dusty Walker.
Hi, Dusty.
And my sobriety date is July the 15th, 1995. And that means that a little over 8 years ago, when I discovered that I was an alcoholic, I was the last to know. when I discovered that I was an alcoholic, I thought that life as I knew it was over, and that was a really, really bad thing. And I found out, though, that as with most thoughts that I've had, that that I was right and I was wrong. Life as I knew it was over. It was absolutely over, but it wasn't a bad thing. It was a really good thing. Life as I knew it, things are completely different now, but that it's been a really good thing. I'm supposed to tell you. The book tells us that I'm supposed to tell you. By the way, this is my I've graduated to a really big book, and I'm not going to read to you. But I use it for moral support and. What I'm supposed to do, this book tells me that what I'm supposed to do is tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I know that when people tell you their story, some people will tell you, concentrate a lot on what it was like, and you'll hear a lot of drunkalogue. And some people will tell you what happened. We'll concentrate on that. And some people will tell you a lot, and we'll concentrate a lot on what it's like now. And I'm not really sure what tonight's going to be like. I've told my story a lot of times, and rarely do I tell it the same way twice. But maybe after the meeting you can tell me what it was like. I've already asked God into this. I'm not in the outcome business. I just take the action, and we'll see what the outcome's like. But I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to tell you a lot of drunkalogue. Pretty sure I'm not going to do that. I'll do a little qualifying, you know. And I'm pretty sure that you'll be convinced that I have earned a seat. I deserve a seat here by the end of the talk. But when I was new in here, I heard a lot of stories, speakers, and heard a lot of drunkalogue onlys, and sometimes I just wanted to go drink. Usually when I came to a meeting, I wanted to drink because I am an alcoholic, and I did have that craving going on. And if all I heard was a drunkalogue and I didn't hear how not to drink, then I wasn't helped a whole lot. And so just hearing a drunkalogue didn't help me much. And I thought in early sobriety that I would try to remember that later on. So I'm not going to tell you a whole bunch of drunkalogue, but I will try to qualify. One of the things I'm going to qualify is that I don't speak for AA. I don't think anyone speaks for AA. All I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, if I'm going to speak from my experience, we're already in trouble because if I'm going to speak from my experience, that's, you know, my understanding, and you know what understanding is. It's just, you know, it's from up here. And let me just share something with you. Understanding is, have you heard the one? Well, don't stop me if you've heard this, but if you heard the one, let's lighten up a little bit. Have you heard the one about the farmer that hadn't been to town in a long time, and his son was getting a little older, and he thought, well, maybe it's time to take son to town. So they went to town, took the son to town, hadn't been in town a long time, so they went to a hotel, and they went into the lobby of the hotel, and up against the wall of the hotel, there's these double doors, and they're opening up and closing, and then when they open up, there's this little closet-looking room in there, and there's this dial-looking thing, clock-looking thing above it, and the doors open, people come in and out, and the doors close, and the little dial moves and stuff, and so they see this little old granny lady with a cane walking up to the doors, and the doors open, and she walks in and the doors close and the dial moves and the doors open back up and this very young, dressed to the nine, looking really fine, coiffed hair young lady walks out and the dad turns to his son and says, "Son, I don't know what just happened, but next week we're coming back and we're bringing your ma." That was his understanding. That was his experience. And so we're in trouble if all I'm sharing is my experience. But I'm going to share my strength and my hope, so maybe we'll make it through. I took my first drink at about 14 and a half. And right away, I found my solution. I had found my solution because I found that sense of ease and comfort that the Big Book tells us about. I can trace alcoholism in my family on my father's side back five generations that I know about without missing a generation. So why I thought that I wasn't going to be an alcoholic, I won't tell you I don't know. I do know. It's because I was young, and that's the way young people are. But I didn't think I was going to be an alcoholic. But I never fit in. I've always been an alcoholic since I was born. I just felt apart from and other than, and I was always on the outside looking in, and I was. I could be in the middle of a crowd of people, and I looked like I was fitting in, but I wasn't. I'd be in the middle of a crowd, and I was alone. And I always thought that you look like you fit in your skin a whole lot better than I ever felt like I fitted in mine. You look like you had it going on, but I never felt like I did. But when I took that drink, I felt pretty okay, and I felt pretty okay about you, and I could talk to you, and I could talk to the ladies, and as soon as I took that drink, whether I knew it or not, my priorities were set. And it was me, and the drink, and the ladies, and excitement, and cars, and guns, and stuff like that. You know, just, that was, my priorities were set. And so, I didn't start out to be drinking every day, you know, but I started out to drink every chance I got. And by just to give you an example, in high school, my senior year, I would take my lunch. And on the way to school, I'd pull over to the side of the road, and I took about a quart thermos of iced tea with me. And I'd pull over to the side of the road, and I'd pour about half that iced tea out, and I'd fill it the rest of the way with gin. And I'd take a couple of shots just to get started for the morning. And then at lunch, I'd eat my little sandwich and my chips and drink that iced tea. And I didn't think anything about that. I did not think that to be odd at all. That was just the way I did it. And then on the weekends, my parents would always go out of town. We'd built a lake house out at the lake. And when I say we built, I don't mean we had it built. We built a lake house. And so they would go out of town and, you know, I always had a date, and no, y'all go on, y'all have a good time. I'll stay home. I got a hot date. I always had a hot date. And so Friday afternoon, as soon as I got out of school, I was heading for the date and drinking all weekend long, and I'd try to taper that thing down sometime Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, so that I could get back to school Monday, because I'm a functional drunk, you know. I'm going to try to manage it so that I can do the deal, because I know you'll pull me out of the game if I don't do the deal, and I'm going to be a functional drunk, but I'm going to drink too. So that's the way it was, and I joined the military actually before I even got out of high school. I did graduate from high school, started doing a little college, went active duty, got married before I went active duty. I was in the service during the Vietnam era, went on a lot of secret missions, stayed at sea a lot of the time. Wasn't able to drink when I was on those missions, so tried to make up for it when I was in port. But that kind of curtailed my drinking a little bit. By the time I got out of the Navy, I already had a divorce. I was in the Navy a little over 2 years. I was at sea 1 year, 9 months, and 5 days. And that marriage lasted 2 years. So I almost don't count that marriage. When I talk to you about my alcoholism, I wind up telling you about the wreckage of life that my alcoholism winds up being the choices that I made, the really poor choices that my alcoholic life led me to make. I want to cut it short. I'll talk to you about by the time I was 47 years old, I got to these rooms with 30 years of drinking and 4 divorces. And I never divorced anybody in my life. And I never wanted a divorce in my life. My idea of the way things should happen was, you know, you grow up and you meet her and you fall in love. You know, you fall in love and you get married and you live happily ever after. And I kept trying that over and over and over again. But I found out when I did my 4th and 5th step that I made some really poor choices in those respects. And it didn't work out that way. So I made some really poor choices, and I did that over and over and over again. The way I got here was that 4th marriage was the first one was 2 years, and then there was one that was 1 year, and there was one that was 3 years that had a little girl involved. And that was the one that I had a chance to get this program. My dad died real young. He was an alcoholic. He died sober in this program, 13 years sober in this program, and he didn't die of this disease. But when he died, I've got a twin brother, and I've got an older sister, and I can't call them alcoholics, but they waddle and they quack, okay? But somehow I got my dad's big book. I didn't ask for it, but somehow I got it. Somehow I wound up with my dad's big book, and I'm reading this big book, and I'm not an alcoholic, okay? I got no drinking problem. But, I'm kind of like that. I'm kind of like the three guys. Did you hear it? Don't stop me if you heard this, but you heard about the three guys that grew up in the small town, and then one of them moved away. And after they grew up, one of them moved away, and time passed, and then one of the two that lived in town died. And so the guy that had moved away came back to town, and the two of them were standing at the graveside, and well, what happened to old Bill? The name changes every time I tell this. What tonight it's Bill. What happened to old Bill? Well, you know, we used to drink, you know, when we were growing up. Yeah, we all did. And well, old Bill, he kept on drinking. And well, did it get to be a problem? Yeah. It got to be a little bit of a problem, and so he kept drinking, and you know, he Well, he lost his job over it, but he got another job. Wasn't as good a job, but he got another job. And well, you know, his wife, she left him, but you know, he got her back, and then he lost his car, and then but he got that back, and then he got fired from his job again, and then he kept getting sick, and then he'd get in the hospital, and they'd get him built back up, and then they'd send him back out, tell him not to drink, and then he lost his job again, and he got another job, but then he lost his car, and he couldn't get it back, so he lost that job because he couldn't get to work, and got another job, didn't pay very good, and he lost the house, and so then his wife left him for good, and then finally he was kept going to the hospital, and finally one time he went to the hospital, and he didn't make it. And the guy from out of town said, "Well, did he ever try AA?" "Oh no, it never got that bad." Well, that's the way I was. I never got that bad. Well, anyway, I got my dad's big book when I was about 24 years old. He'd passed away. And I was in that 3-year marriage, the one that lasted 3 years, and I had that little girl, and I read my dad's big book, even though I wasn't an alcoholic, and I thought, man, this stuff is pretty good. This is very profound. I ought to try this. This looks like a really good way of life. Well, about that time that wife left me, and she took that little girl, and they went out of state, and I didn't know where they were, and I crawled back into the bottle. And I had some more of my story to live, some more of that drinking to do. And I was 24, and I had, you know, I wasn't ready yet. I didn't get into this program until I was 47 years old. In early sobriety, I used to look at young people like all of y'all. And I used to think, man, why couldn't I got it when I was young, like all of y'all? And what I know today is that I didn't get it when I was young, like all of y'all, because I wasn't ready yet. You see, my higher power loves me enough that he will let me go through whatever I have to go through until I've got whatever it takes to get to the point that when I got here, I was willing to do anything to get it. I came in here into this program through a treatment center, and before I got out of the treatment center, they sat us down. There was about a dozen of us in the room, and they said, "Look around." There's about 12 of us. I said, "Look around, look at your neighbor," because in 1 year, only 2 of you are still going to be sober. Statistics tell us this. And I looked around, and my neighbors were looking around. We were all looking around at each other, and I know some of them were looking around thinking, "Not me." And I was looking around, and I was scared to death. Oh, my God, this is really bad. This is really bad odds. And about that time, they said, "Look around again, because in 2 years, out of the 12 of you sitting in this room, in 2 years, only one of you is still going to be sober." And I was scared to death. I was scared to death because I'd been living just over 30 years of an alcoholic death, and I knew what that alcoholic death was. The big book tells us that a choice between living a life on spiritual principles or an alcoholic death for most people is not a hard choice to make, and I was faced with that choice. And they're telling me that out of the 12 people in this room, and 2 years, only one of us has got that choice. And these are terrible odds. And And the one thought that's rolling through my mind in big bold face letters is, I've got to do everything they tell me to do. I've got no choice. I've got no chance. I've just absolutely got no chance. God help you if you got between me and my meeting. Just God help you. I did everything they told me to do. They said get a sponsor. They said go to a meeting every night. They said get a sponsor. I was going to meeting every night, and I was about 2 weeks sober, and I was helping clean up the meeting room, and I was helping clean up the meeting room, and Arlie says, Dusty, and I was helping Arlie, and he was a man that I'd heard share in the meetings, and I'd been watching him and listening to him, and he was a man that had been sharing in the solution, and I'd been listening to a lot of them, and some of them shared in the problem, and some of them shared in the solution. I was looking for a sponsor that was going to share in the solution, because I needed somebody that knew how to stay sober. And I knew from hearing him share that he'd been through the work, that he'd been through the 12 steps. He'd worked all 12 steps. I knew from hearing him share that he continued to work the 12 steps every day to the best of his ability. And he says, Dusty, do you have a sponsor yet? I said, no, Arlie. I was going to ask you. I said, Arlie, would you be my sponsor? He stopped what he was doing. He walked over to me. He looked me in the eye and he said, Dusty, I'm sponsoring 14 guys right now. And my heart sank. My heart fell. I knew I was still going to get a sponsor, but I knew I had to still look, keep looking. And in the next breath, he said, but this program saved my life. It gave me a life that I always wanted and I never knew how to get. And if there's anything I can do to help you get it, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll be your sponsor. I'll be your temporary sponsor. I'll sponsor you until either you say it's not working or you get another sponsor. And you call me every night, and I work with you after the meetings. Every night, and we'll start working the steps. Meet me here tomorrow night. I'll see you at the meeting tomorrow night, and you plan to meet me after the meeting, and we'll start working on the steps. And so I did. I saw him the next night, and we did a really freaky thing. Really, really, really spooky thing. Really freaky thing. We did some reading in the big book, which that wasn't the freaky thing. But the freaky thing was, he and I got down on our knees, which was kind of freaky. Oh no, you hadn't heard it yet. That was kind of freaky. But we held hands. That was really freaky. And we prayed together. I hadn't held hands and prayed with someone since I was a little kid. It was really strange. It was really very, very strange. And we did the first step prayer. And I did the first step with him. We met every night after the meeting, for weeks. We read in the big book and we talked and he worked me through the steps. We did them one at a time, just like that. And he worked me through the steps. I didn't have too much trouble with the first step. I'm a real fast learner. I've already shared with you that it only took a little over 30 years of drinking, of doing that alcoholic death to get there. So I really didn't have any trouble with it. You know, admitting that I was powerless over alcohol, quick 30 years, and boy, I was there. And unmanageable life, you know, four marriages and divorces, unmanageability. I planned my life around alcohol. Family life, you know, if I had something to do with the family, you know, just as long as I could plan some time before I went to the family outing so that I could, you know, drink and get right for the flight before, because I knew when I got to the family thing that I, you know, wasn't going to be able to drink the way I needed to drink when I got there. So I had to be sure and be able to drink, you know, get right for the flight before I got. So when I got there, I could kind of, you know, because they didn't know how I drank. And I wasn't going to let them know how I drank. So, and then I couldn't stay there very long. And I had to plan that time for the family outing while I was there. So I could just kind of plan it pretty short, you know, just come and let them see the presents and then get away, and so I could do some more drinking the way I needed to drink. So that's not, yeah, that is unmanageability, isn't it? That's pretty unmanageable. Unmanageability, spending money that you don't have. How do you spend money that you don't have? They call that credit, don't they? Credit that you can't pay. Well, if I'm buying booze on credit when I can't pay my bills, my car and my house and stuff like that, that'd be unmanageable, wouldn't it? Okay, step one was a snap. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, because when I came in here, I heard you telling your story, and I knew that you were an alcoholic from your story. Sounded very much like my story. I came every night. You know, they told me that there was only two of us after a year going to be sober out of a dozen. And after 2 years, only one of us was going to, you know, you scared me to death. I wanted to be one of those people. So I came every night. And there were some old-timers that were coming every night. To this home group that I went to. And I knew they were coming every night, because I was coming every night, and they were there every night. And I was kind of confused. I was really kind of confused, because, you know, I'd read the big book. It didn't seem that difficult. And the old timers, when they shared with me, they didn't sound that slow. And I thought to myself, when are they going to get it? You know, I mean, why are they having to come every night? When are they going to get it? I mean, God, I hope when I'm got that kind of sobriety, 10, 20, that guy's got 30 years, he's still coming every night. Hope I don't have to come every night when I've got that. When are they going to get it? Why, they don't really act that slow. Why are they having to come every night? You know, they're not getting it. Why? I just didn't understand why they didn't get it. I got it. I got it now. I got it. I didn't get it then. I thought they didn't get it. I didn't get it. I got it now. They weren't there. If that old timer wasn't there that night, he probably wasn't going to drink. He wasn't there for him. He was there for me, the newcomer. He was there to get me a half cup of coffee so I wouldn't spill it on his carpet, because I was shaking. And, you know, and it was, I was still an ungrateful alcoholic. I thought he was saving coffee. I thought he was too cheap to give me a whole cup of coffee, not realizing that I was gonna spill it. You know, I was still into me. He was there with his hand out, shaking my hand, telling me that he was glad I was there, loving me when I was unlovable. Telling me he was glad I was there. Telling me to keep coming back. You're coming back tomorrow night. Keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle happens. We're glad you're here. He kept telling me that. It impressed me. I kept coming back. I didn't leave before the miracle happened. happened. He was there for me, the newcomer, to show me that this program works. And I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity because I saw it worked for him. You know, they had the chairs along the walls, and then some other chairs out in the middle, and then some other chairs out in the front. And I didn't sit on that front row because I wasn't a winner yet. I sat on that back row, on that back wall, so that they wouldn't see me, I thought, and they wouldn't notice me. They would tell what it was like and what had happened and what it was like now. And I remember I always carry a handkerchief. I even did then. And I would hear him sharing what it was like. And you got to remember, it was still like that for me. I was still in the middle of it. And they would tell what it was like, and you know, it was a non-smoking group, but gosh, they must either changed the filters or something in the air conditioner, because there was stuff in the air, and I had eye problems, and I would have to keep wiping my eyes, because I sure wasn't crying or anything, but I sure had some eye trouble, you know, and then they'd be telling what it was like, but then they would tell what happened, and we know what happened. We know what happened. What happened was the 12 steps. What happened was the higher power and the 12 steps. And then, you know, there really was some stuff in the room then, you know. And I really did have some eye problems. And then they would tell what it was like now. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember praying to that God that I wasn't sure I believed in just quite yet. I remember praying, God, please, if there is a God, please let what these people are saying be true. And just please, God, let it be true for me. Let me have that. Let me have that. And I did step three. I made the decision to work these steps and see if that God that had done it for them would do it for me. And he has. And he was then. And I was seeing him working in my life. By then the tears were rolling so fast down my cheeks I couldn't keep up with it. And there was no hiding that I was crying. And I started to move into the middle in the front row. And I became a winner. And I started sitting in the front rows. And I started sharing with them. And I started letting some of those people know how much I was hurting. And I started trying to share some in the solution and not just in the problem. And I did my fourth step. Now, I'm not one of those people that had a lot of problem getting my pen and my posterior and my paper in the same room at the same time. I've heard tell that that's the hardest part of doing a fourth step. For me, it wasn't. Here's how I did my four step. It took 2 weeks for me to do a four step. In the morning, I would get up and I would say my prayers and I would ask God to help me stay sober for another day, and I'll go to work, and as soon as I got off work, I would go do my meeting and I would see my sponsor for a few minutes, and then I would quick run home and eat a quick bite, and I would go to my room and I would start writing on that four step. And here's how I would judge when I would stop writing on that four step. Either the tears would be so thick that I couldn't see the paper anymore, or the tears would be running so fast on the paper that the ink would start to run. And I would put that paper up, and I would get down on my knees, and I would thank my higher power for keeping me sober for another day and for helping me to do some more of that four step. And I would go to bed. And the next morning I'd do it again. And it took about, because I'm peeling back the layers on that onion. And I, you know, I did, There's lots of ways to do a four-step, and there's some people in this program that will tell you there's no wrong way to do a four-step, but me and my sponsor will tell you that there's only one way to do a proper four-step, and that's just the way it is out of the big book, and we do those columns. And so I did the name, and I let, and my, and then I, now my sponsor did help me. He suggested to me that I finish one column before I go on to the next. He said, you know, Dusty, you're just a little bit too scattered right now to go across the columns. You know, don't try to do a name and don't try to do part of column one, two, and just do all of column one first and then go to column two. Just do it that way. It helped a lot. Helped a lot. I love column one, just names, you know, and the person or the principal or the institution, and the institution of marriage was on my first column, and our uncle was on there too. Our uncle? Uncle Sam? Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Okay. and then, so that's easy. That's just a list. And then what they did, I love column two. Don't you love column two? Love column two. What they did to me. Oh gosh. Yes. Love column two. What they did to me. And then, that was easy. And then, how it affected me was not quite so hard, but a little harder, you know. Because, you know, I'm kind of a complicated guy, kind of guy, and so how it affected me was a little harder. And then, of course, now on mine, fear was, actually I could boil all of mine down to fear of some sort. But how it affected me was the hard part for me. My part in it was the hard part for me on some of it. But by completing one column before I went on to the next, that helped me a lot because, on the ones where I had some difficulty, by the time I would fill in the ones on a particular column that I did know, some of the others were starting to come to me on that column, and so I really was able to fill in each column completely. And so, but on the ones on the fourth column, my part in it. What was my part in it on those marriages? Well, other than not treating them real well and being selfish and self-centered in the extreme, I did make some poor choices. I think I mentioned that earlier, didn't I? I did make some really poor choices, and so yeah, that was my part in it. There's one other thing I'll mention just in really quick passing that sometimes comes up in my story. There was some abuse that happened when I was a child, and I won't go into any detail at all. But what I will say is that, sometimes it comes to be a question as to what is my part in that. And my part in that is that as a child, I took no part in that. A child has no part in that. But my part in it as an adult is that I'm no longer a child and I need to deal with it as, you know, I need to take care of that as an adult, you know. And I did that, you know. And the big book does tell us that there are professionals. You know, the big book will take care of alcohol problems and that there are professionals for any other problem that we need to go to. And that's what I did. So that was my part in it. Once I become an adult, I need to take care of that. And that was my part in it. So I, you know, took care of it. there was something that I didn't want to have to tell in my fifth step. And so, the way I dealt with that when I did my fourth step was that I wrote my fourth step as if I wasn't going to do a fifth step. And so I just wrote my fourth step as if I wasn't going to do a fifth step and decided that I would make that decision later. And then when I did my fifth step, I went ahead and told it. And I felt like that was a good way to do it. And that way, I had it already written in my fourth step, and that worked out pretty good for me. I strongly suggest that we be fearless and thorough, because if we're not, the chance for me was that I was going to drink, and I didn't want to be one of those people that out of that room of 12 that was going to drink again, because to drink for me was to die. There may be other ways to do it, but I was just afraid if I didn't write on that fourth step at all, because I didn't want to do it on the fifth step, that was just taking a chance. So I'll just write it on this fourth step. It's on there, and I wound up doing it in my fifth step, and it turned out all right. I think there's something. Probably two or three things that all of us think we're going to take to our grave. You know, I'm just not ever going to tell anybody. And that's the stuff I drank over. Why would I do a fourth and a fifth step and not share that stuff? That's the only stuff that I drank over. Why would I do a fourth and a fifth step over all the other stuff and not do it over the stuff that's the only stuff I really drank over anyway? That's the stuff that holds the power over me. Once it's not a secret anymore, it doesn't hold the power over me. I got so much relief out of my fourth and a fifth step that it's just like the big book says. I walked through that arch a free man. I'd never felt that way before. And the sixth and seventh step were just, I was ready. Each one of the steps that I've done before I did the step, I always felt like that I had an idea of what it was going to be like. You know, well, you know, when I do six and seven, you know, I got an idea what it's going to be like. And I've never had a clue on this side of a step what it was going to be like. It's like somebody told me that was in the program. You can't experience the experience until you've experienced the experience. You know, I've had some sponsees who was just really, really intelligent. Really intelligent. And I've had to tell them, just quit trying to figure it out and just do it. Just quit trying to figure it out and just do it. And there have been a time or two that I had to tell myself that. Just quit trying to figure it out and just do it. After I've done each of the steps, it's never been what I thought it was going to be. It's always been so much better. And it continues to be better. I do a little bit of service work. I take some meetings to some prisons. I get a lot of gratitude from being able to do that. You know, one of the things that we look forward to in our home groups is we get to see people come in who look as beaten and sad as I did when I came in and lost. And we get to see them come in, and we get to see them get it. And not only do we see them get to come in and get it, but then we get to see them show somebody else the program. And we get to see them passing it on. I get to see that in a prison too. Just like in a home group. I, you know, when I drive away from the prison at night, I've got this sense of gratitude. And it's not the obvious sense of gratitude that I get to leave and they have to stay. It's not that at all. It's that sense of gratitude that that there's somebody there at that prison that that got the message, and that I got to be a little part of that. And that there's somebody there at that prison that that's helping to pass the message on there at the prison. That's passing it on. You know, if you get right down to it, this message goes all the way back to really to Akron or New York. Either Bill or Dr. Bob. Just one alcoholic to another. That's what it boils down to. That's the joy. You know, it's just me to you, to your sponsee, to their sponsee. And if it weren't for that, there'd be a lot of lost souls out there. And there's a lot of fertile ground out there still. Our work's not done. And there's a whole lot of people out there that still need us. The only sad thing about it is, this program is not for those that need it. It's for those that want it. I'm so grateful that out of those 12 people in that room that day, I'm one of those that wanted it. I'll just close with this. I'm convinced today that if I'll just trust God and clean house and help others, I'll be okay.